The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. You know, when you think of the giants of literature, Fyodor Dostoevsky is always right at the top of that list.
For sure.
But approaching him can feel like trying to climb Mount Everest. It's just massive, complex, and honestly, a little overwhelming.
And that's where we come in today. We're offering you a shortcut, kind of the specialized beer you need to navigate that terrain. We're going deep into Dostoevsky, but through the very specific and insightful lens of the scholar Deborah Martinson.
Our mission for you today is pretty simple. We want to show you, using her research, how this 19th century writer, who was just plagued by personal disasters.
Just unbelievable stuff.
Became the ultimate moral psychologist. He was grappling with shame and guilt and free will long before modern psychology even had the words for it.
Right. And Martinson's focus is on what she calls the relentless exploration of ethical becoming.
Ethical becoming. I like that.
It's this idea that our identity isn't static. It's forged moment by moment through moral struggle and the choices we make. We're always in the process of becoming something, better or worse.
I find that framing so, so compelling because his life, on the surface, just seems like this series of awful tragedies, a mock execution, prison, chronic illness, a crippling gambling addiction.
Yeah.
Yet he somehow turned that intense suffering into these profound universal truths. So how did a scholar like Martinson connect those two worlds? Okay, let's unpack this.
To really get that connection, we have to look at our guide here, Deborah Martinson. She was a professor of Russian and comparative literature at Columbia University.
Right.
And maybe more importantly, she was the former president of the International Dostoevsky Society.
Yeah.
So her work is, you know, globally recognized as definitive.
Her academic standing is definitely top tier. But when you read her analysis, what makes her perspective so different, you know, compared to other biographers who might just focus on the dates and events?
What really sets Martinson apart is her dual expertise. She's a literary analyst, but she approaches the material using psychological theory.
Ah, I see.
She wasn't just studying his plots. She was studying the minds of his characters. She published this major work, Surprised by Shame, where she details how shame and guilt are the real engines in his stories.
So she views Dostoevsky as a, what was the term?
A moral psychologist, someone testing human behavior under extreme duress, all inside his fiction.
So for her, the novels aren't just fiction. They're like these sophisticated thought experiments that came from his own life.
Exactly. And that brings us right to the core thesis of her work. She argues that Dostoevsky's novels serve as philosophical laboratories. Yeah. He wasn't interested in giving his readers these neat, simple answers. Instead, he used fiction to run these messy, deep psychological experiments on the human soul.
Exploring things like evil and suffering and the nature of freedom.
Right, the terrifying nature of freedom. And that's where his personal trauma becomes the raw material. Martinson's book really answers a huge question. How did a life marked by such agony?
The near execution, Siberian exile, epilepsy.
All of it. How did that become the blueprint for his vision of humanity?
And what's her answer?
Her answer is clear.
Yeah.
His entire body of work is about dramatizing the terrifying freedom of the human will.
Okay.
He shows us that our greatest gift is also our greatest burden. The freedom to choose good or well or total nihilism and the immense responsibility that comes with it.
And Martinson really demonstrates how his big novels are these layered responses to the questions that tormented him personally. She gives his life this amazing thematic coherence.
Right. So if we accept that his books are these philosophical laboratories, where did he get the raw materials for these experiments?
Well, that has to lead us back to his life, doesn't it? Specifically, that huge moment in 1849.
The mock execution.
Yes. Martinson details this so brilliantly. He was arrested for being part of this socialist intellectual group. He was let out, sentenced to death by firing squad.
Wow.
And only told it was a sham at the very, very last second. Imagine having 5 minutes left to live and then suddenly getting your entire life back.
Martinson sees this as a kind of symbolic death and rebirth. It just stripped away all his abstract intellectual idealism.
Right.
What was left was just this visceral, profound appreciation for the sheer gift of being alive. And that experience was immediately followed by 4 years in a Siberian labor camp, the Katorga.
And what was the big insight he gained from the Katorga? I mean, living among hardened criminals must have been a huge shock for a former intellectual.
Oh, it was. It completely shattered his old beliefs in, you know, utopian socialism and this abstract idea of the people.
He saw reality.
He saw a much more complex reality. He witnessed both unspeakable brutality and these unexpected moments of grace. It forced him to conclude that good and evil aren't social categories. They're not about your environment or your education.
They're choices.
They are profound spiritual choices made deep inside the individual heart. And that's really the seed of his whole idea of redemption through suffering.
What's so brilliant about Martinson's work is how she connects his chronic problems, his afflictions, directly to his genius. Let's talk about the epilepsy and the gambling.
Absolutely. His epilepsy, for example, it gave him these intense pre-seizure mystical experiences. He called them moments of supreme harmony.
Like a spiritual vision.
Exactly. This overwhelming sense of clarity. And he then put those experiences into the spiritual breakthroughs of his key characters.
And the gambling addiction that gives him that really dark, compelling insight into human compulsion.
Precisely. His compulsive gambling gave him firsthand knowledge of self-destructive behavior, of that struggle between free will and just irrational impulse. He didn't just theorize about compulsion, he lived it.
That lived experience of internal struggle, that brings us right to Martinson's analysis of what she calls the birth of psychological realism, starting with Notes from Underground.
Yes, the underground man, the first real anti-hero. He is a philosophical bombshell, just an explosion against the deterministic thinking of his time.
So Martinson shows he's rebelling against two big ideas, scientific determinism.
The belief that all human action is predictable.
And rational egoism.
The theory that we always act in our own calculated self-interest.
There's that famous line where he says he'd rather suffer and act stupidly than be predictable. The cry that 2 times 2 makes 5 is really about asserting irrational freedom, isn't it?
It's a radical defense of chaos.
Mm-hmm.
He's basically saying, I will destroy my own happiness just to prove I am free, that I am not some, you know, calculated product. Mm. And this sets the stage perfectly for Crime and Punishment.
Right. And Martinson analyzes Crime and Punishment as the ultimate test of an idea as action. Raskolnikov's theory that extraordinary men can murder lesser beings for a greater good.
And she shows how that intellectual arrogance completely fails. The crime doesn't liberate him. It doesn't prove he's a genius.
It isolates him.
Totally. It cuts him off from everyone. The novel proves that moral law is an internal spiritual reality, not just some external rule you can dismiss.
So when we get to the Brothers Karamazov, Martinson sees this as his ultimate philosophical testament, the grand finale.
Absolutely. She analyzes the three brothers, Dmitri, the man of passion, Ivan, the cold intellectual, and Alyosha, the man of faith, as representing the three warring parts of the human condition. It's a map of the soul.
But the real intellectual challenge is Ivan's parable, The Grand Inquisitor. And this is the paradox of Dostoevsky's method, isn't it?
It's stunning.
He puts the most powerful argument against God, the idea that humanity can't handle freedom and would rather be controlled, right in the middle of a novel that's arguing for faith.
And Martinson stresses that this is the brilliance of what's called polyphony. He doesn't create a straw man for the Inquisitor.
No, it's a compelling argument.
It's a very logical case for control over freedom. He forces you, the reader, to feel the pull of Ivan's position. For Dostoevsky, truth doesn't come from dogma. It emerges from the struggle between these powerful competing worldviews.
That complexity is why he's still so relevant. So if we zoom out from the books to the broader implications, what are the core themes Martinson says we should take away?
The first, and it's the most central, is the theme of suffering as spiritual transformation. Her insight here is fundamental. Real moral growth requires confronting and accepting suffering as the path to wisdom.
Which really challenges our modern impulse to, you know, eliminate all discomfort. We're sort of engineered to avoid pain. But he's suggesting suffering shatters our illusions and opens us up to compassion.
Yes. And second is the theme, the burden of freedom and responsibility. Because we are free, we are terrifyingly responsible. She highlights this principle of universal responsibility. Each of us is responsible for everyone and for everything.
So what does that really mean for us? It's a radical call to own our decisions, but also to see how they affect everyone else. It's an antidote to a culture that's all about rights without responsibility.
And thirdly, that theme, the dialogue of ideas, mm-hmm. The polyphony. As we discussed, Martinson teaches us that real critical thinking means engaging with opposing views in their strongest form. not just knocking down the easy ones.
It forces intellectual honesty. It's a great discipline for navigating our world. And, you know, Martinson reminds us how powerful his language is. He boils these huge ideas down into these unforgettable statements.
He had a real knack for that. One idea is pain and suffering are always inevitable for a large intelligence and a deep heart. Mm-hmm. It basically means that moral insight isn't cheap. The capacity to feel deeply comes with the cost of vulnerability.
And what about the one from his near-death experience?
That would be, the mystery of human existence lies not in just staying alive, but in finding something to live for. After facing that firing squad, he knew that just existing isn't enough. Purpose is what we need.
And his definition of hell, that one's powerful.
It is. What is hell? I maintain that it is the suffering of being unable to love. So for him, hell isn't some external punishment. It's internal spiritual isolation. It reinforces love as our most fundamental capacity.
So moving from those big ideas to our daily lives, how can we actually apply Martinson's analysis?
I think her work is, at its core, a guide to building empathy. His characters are so complex, they force us to look beyond surface flaws to understand the deep psychological reasons people do what they do.
Right. It helps us see the human behind the label, whether that label is criminal or addict or whatever. It's a really compassionate way to see the world.
And for ethical decision-making. Martinson points to this idea of active love, not just a passive feeling, but difficult, practical love that requires action and service. It applies everywhere, family, work, community.
And most personally, we can use his insights for self-understanding. So instead of seeing our own crises as just setbacks to get over,
we follow his example.
We can see them as opportunities for transformation, using our own trauma for growth.
Precisely. His life proved that the hardest experiences, if you face them honestly, can become the source of your deepest insights.
My final takeaway from Martinson's analysis is just the incredible tenacity of the man himself. She makes it so clear that his life struggles, the prison, the addiction, the illness, they weren't weaknesses he overcame.
No.
They were the very crucible that forged his unique insight. His life is just this powerful lesson in turning obstacles into innovation.
And if we connect that to the bigger picture, Martinson's most valuable lesson is that human complexity and moral ambiguity, they aren't problems to solve. They're fundamental parts of being alive that we have to understand.
Right.
The lasting insight is that concept of life as a process of ethical becoming. We are constantly creating ourselves through our choices, confirming the terrifying and beautiful reality of our own freedom.
That's a powerful thought to leave you with. The idea that your identity is still being written choice by choice. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.